Blog Talk Radio.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Anything's possible!
RSD Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Watch the game changer.
What's your name, boy?
D-Well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
CLT Sports PhD.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
We need more dollars.
RSG. Renegade Radio. The floodgates is about to open.
Everybody has an opinion.
Man must have a code.
We're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello. You play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage being it.
I mean, I'm not griping the third overall player on my list.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo. It's provocative. He's real big excuses. You know, we're not going to make any excuses.
You need to move more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it, sucker?
Yes, we can. And the wait is over. You are now listening to The Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports, RSG, Renegade Radio. I am your host, Marcus the Game Changer, one-third of the illustrious three-man booth. Allow me to introduce the other two-thirds. To my right, I have my man, D. Will. Holla at the people.
Man, I'm excited. I went out and got my Russell Westbrook shirt, fishing shirt. I feel like I'm styling, and I'm about to get those glasses. I feel that fresh.
You got your pajama top on.
That's it. I had to hit one of these little kids as they was walking to school that didn't grab that shirt. That's all I can
get. Sometimes you got to pull a jack move. He was all ready for his sleepover. You done stuck him up. You can't go to the sleepover now. He got to rework his whole weekend. So we got D. Wills rocking a Russell Westbrook style pajama top. PhD, my man, congrats. Brother PhD this weekend, listeners, RSG fans. His brother crossed the stage, graduated, got his papers. Welcome, brother. You're hosting on the other side now. How'd that feel?
Feels good, man. I can't even throw out my regular present with that kind of introduction. Like I said a few weeks ago, it's Christmas in May with the NBA playoffs. I can't wait to get going on that chatter.
Yes, and thanks for that. Thanks for that very, very well-placed segue. We got a slamming show for you all tonight. Again, you are listening to The Real Sports Guys. For Real Guys Talk Real Sports, RSG Renegade Radio, www.realsportsguys.com. And it is time for the intro to let you know where we run down the show. So we have the funky editorial tonight. During the funky editorial, we will be getting deep, I mean like 6 feet deep, into the NBA playoffs. It's been a long time, and we shouldn't have left you. Now we're back. All right? We're back. And so we got it's been a lot that has gone on in the league, in the playoffs. Things have evolved, and we have to give you our assessment of everything that's going on in the playoff landscape. but we have to give it to you RSG style because we know that's what you come here for. So we got that in the Funky Editorial. After the Funky Editorial, for those of you listeners who have been keeping up with us throughout the months, we've been going through our top 20 hip-hop songs of all time. We're down to our top five. Each of us is going to take a week and unveil our top five. This week it will be D. Wills. He's going to unveil his top five after the Funky Editorial. Then we're going to get into the five on the Black Hand side, a staple of the RSG Renegade Radio Show. We take five topics or five phrases, five statements, five things in general, and we give you our perspective on them. This week, we're going to find a home for Dwight around Your Mouth Howard. That's what he's known in these parts from henceforth. He will be known as Dwight around Your Mouth Howard. We're going to figure out where does he go. Each of us has been assigned a team or multiple teams to figure out how can this particular franchise acquire Dwight Howard services. We're also going to talk a little bit about the whole Van Gundy situation, the situation in Orlando. We're going to get you caught up with all of that. Then from there, we're going to go off the dome, talk a little bit of Jeremy Lin, BCU and Butler switching conferences, the BCS looking to reconfigure, and then we're going to talk to Manny versus some Pacquiao versus Bradley. We're also going to get into Pacquiao's anti-gay marriage comments. And then we're going to get into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Again, the Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio, RSG, is brought to you by Resistance Digital. That's our sponsor. They sponsor the Dog of the Week. We're going to get into that. And then we're going to go into the shutdown, which will lead us into the after hours. So, with all that said, fellas, let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. So, first up, we have the Funky Editorial. Let's get into it.
Fellas, the one thing we need to say, shall we say it, y'all? Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
right.
Coleman, Ryan,
say
it. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right. So in this edition of the Funky Editorial, we're going to get you caught up on the NBA playoffs, RSG style. Now, first up, we're going to go through several topics. First up, and I'm going to pass it to my man D. Wills, we want to talk about the San Antonio Spurs, a team that's not getting a lot of love in the mainstream media because they're in San Antonio. If they were in New York City, L.A., if Miami was having a run like they're having through the playoffs, right now they haven't lost the playoff game, we'd be hearing all about it. This team is really, really good. And the question I ask is, does anybody care? And if nobody cares, why? Can you break that down for the people out there, D. Wills?
I think that it's sometimes you can just be so good that you're bland. One of the things that you heard a couple of the commentators talk about it. I forget who was hitting it up, but they were saying that they when they went to interview folks at San Antonio. You know, they talked to Popovich, and Popovich would say it was the GM, and, you know, trying to get a sense of why the success, and they all would pass it to someone else. Tony Parker would say it's Duncan, and then they said, but that's how they play on the court. And we were talking about off the air about this team is a throwback to the 80s, the way they play, in a sense that the sharing of the basketball, unselfishness. They're deep as a team. Folks are sacrificing, and it's not flashy. And I think part of the reason why they don't get the kind of attention—not just that they're not in San Antonio, but their leader, Tim Duncan, historically, is not somebody. He's kind of like Brady, in that he hasn't really embraced all the endorsements. He's had enough endorsements, but he's very comfortable with who he is. He hasn't really sought the brand. He's never really been a threat to leave San Antonio, and that's allowed them to kind of work themselves through some of these tough times that they've had at certain points. And they basically have rebuilt, and you have to give this to Pop, they rebuilt their franchise. They didn't get caught up with, you know, this is the way we do it as a Spurs team. You know, they realized they needed to improve scoring. He's not afraid to play people like Leonard and get them involved in the game. So get some young guys in there. They got a great mix of youth, and they got a great mix of of some of that veteran leadership. But the thing about it, even the young folks they have playing have that DNA about they come to the game with that lunch pail bucket, green. All these guys come in and they kind of what they do have is that mentality that allows for them to play with the Spurs. So I think we should care about them. And it's just like it's kind of like it's hard to, you know, they weren't my top team in the playoffs even though they were playing well. I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. And now you just have to, if you have to look at it, they're the most complete team right now left in the playoffs.
They play the beautiful game. The ball movement is just excellent. You know, every time they play, there's probably millions of high school coaches pushing record so they can show this to their AAU kids or their high school team kids to show how you play the game right. The ball movement, they always seem to make the right play. You know, I liken this to baseball. You know, I was a pitcher in baseball, big kid. I could throw very, very hard in Little League and junior high and high school, but I had a control problem. Okay, and the coaches used to always tell me, keep the ball around the plate so your fielders don't get bored. Don't always try to strike somebody out. And, you know, I think about this with the Spurs because Pop has a way to keep to go 8, 9, 10, even 11 deep sometimes. And everybody seems involved, and they get out there and they give it their all for whatever time they're on the court. You know, you look at Bonner, you look at Neal. Splitter is somebody who's really impressed me defensively and just can do a lot around the basket offensively. And these guys – it's not about them. I mean, even look at Ginobili. Ginobili's minutes have been decreased, and we all thought that this was done during the regular season to preserve him. But even during the playoffs, his numbers have stayed down from where they have been traditionally. And he's still contributing at a high level, even playing 10-20% less minutes. So I really like this team. I think that they can beat Oklahoma City. I think Oklahoma City has a fine ball club. But the Spurs, especially the way Duncan is playing at a level, maybe not – his offensive efficiency numbers are excellent. He's getting his numbers with limited touches. You know, he's not putting up 25 and 30 per night, but when they need him at go-to stretches, he's getting it done. And when he can hit that 15-20-foot jump shot, he's one of the best power forward that's ever played in my opinion.
Yeah, and to jump in real quick, you know, this team is much like the Patriots of the NFL. As long as you got Popovich and Dunk and Big Timmy, they're in the mix. They may have years where they're not quite as good, but they're right there in the mix year in and year out. And this year, it's like I think it was a 2010 Patriots team where they got Randy Moss in the mix, and they were Brady was coming back off the ACL injury, and they were just ridiculous. And that's what the Spurs team is right now. They have everything clicking at a pace and a rate that is really hard to keep up. And honestly, if this team was in a different market, we would be talking about being one of the better teams of the last 10 to 15 years. And, you know, there have been some arguments that this may be the best Spurs championship caliber team that they've had in San Antonio in quite some time. When you go through the roster top to bottom, what I love about the Spurs, again, is very much like the Patriots, is that they take guys that other teams cast off and they give them a role and they turn them into very effective, serviceable players. When you talk about a kid like Danny Green, who I've always thought had a skill set that in the right situation, he could be a very effective NBA player. You're seeing him flourish. Boris Vian was just kicked to the curb by
the Grizzlies.
That's the one. You know, and they picked him up, and now you're seeing the Boris Vian we saw back when he was in Phoenix, where he's doing a little bit of everything. He's making plays. He can go inside. He can go outside. He can pass the ball. That's what they look for. And then you got a guy like Steven Jackson who hated life in Milwaukee. All right. He wanted nothing to do with Milwaukee. Okay, he gets out of there. He goes back to San Antonio. People forget that he was there for one of their championships. When he was much younger. He goes back to San Antonio. He knows the culture. He knows how everything fits. And the craziest thing about it is you really don't see Captain Jack as a San Antonio guy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at his profile, you don't see the captain as a San Antonio kind of cat. But he fits in well there. And I think he brings a little bit of an edge that they need, you know. And now as a veteran, he's not as wild as he was when he was younger. Now as a veteran, he's a little bit more composed. He knows how to bring that edge in a more productive way as far as it leading towards good, solid team chemistry, but also a good product on the court. And then you look at guys like Gary Neal, when Patty Mills played, even a guy like Patty Mills. I mean, you can go through that roster.
That's what I was about to say.
I'm not going to go through every single guy, but you can go through their roster top to bottom, and they have a bunch of guys who really fit with what they do, and they do what they want them to do well. And Pop is the guy that brings it all together. He, they have a great management team, and the depth of that roster and the way that roster is playing is really a testament to their management. Now, on the other side of the coin, you got what's going on in MIA, down in South Beach, you know, and I'm going to have to eat some crow. You know, I got the plate in front of me, okay? I got my plate of crow in front of me. It's fried up, you know, got that good auntie recipe, got that good bread on it. It's good and fried up, and I'm going to go ahead and eat my plate of crow. I guess it really was a big three. Who knew? Who knew? After all this time, I guess you could say it was really a big three. Right now, Miami is in the throes of a heated series with the Pacers, which I'm enjoying watching. Tonight, some wood has been laid. D-Wade caught one from Psycho T. Then Psycho T caught one from Haslam, who caught one from Amundsen the other night. So this is one of those throwback series where somebody's going to get hurt. You know, somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's going to get injured. There's going to be some blood. Indiana's not going back
Granger
down. I think they're going
Granger
out of their way. He's going to sit out.
Granger just got hurt.
He on that hologram Tupac. That hologram Tupac. He's thugging a little too hard, man. He's not real. I'm calling him hologram Tupac for the rest of his career. But, you know, the Heat, it has become a series in part because of the loss of Chris Bosh, who, you know, again, I didn't think he was that significant of a piece. You know, he's definitely still, I would say, one of the top 20 players, one of the top 20, 25 players in the league. I'm arguably higher than that, depending upon how you feel about his game. And there's a significant difference in the level of play of the team as a whole when he's not out there. PAD, explain it for the listeners out there what the Bosh effect is and how it affects what the Heat are trying to do, what the Heat usually try and do and what they look like now and how they have to be different.
So to me, Bosh is kind of like that offensive guard, that center in football, that middle linebacker, you know, the ones that don't stack up the statistics, or there aren't any statistics, but when they're gone, they're missed. When they're gone, you notice all the holes that the team has that this guy really helped plug and hide. With Bosh, what he brings to the Heat is he makes the bigs on the other team respect his ability to score. Because at any time, Bosh can go for 25 and 30. He obviously isn't averaging that. All three of these guys are sacrificing numbers, Bosh the most of the three. But you have to respect the fact that he can go, you know, pretty much all the way out to the three-point line, comfortably a step or two inside the three-point line, and score anywhere inside there. And so now what you're seeing, and this is why Haslam had such a good game, is because they're not respecting these bigs, Anthony, even Haslam, to make these 12 to 18 foot jump shots. With what Haslam did last game, and we're even seeing it today, that the Pacers have to respect what Haslam can do. But it was kind of a show me, then I respect it with Haslam. With Bosh, it's an automatic thing. You have to defend him straight up. And when you defend him straight up, this gives LeBron and D-Wade so much more room to operate. It gives the shooters more space. So when this guy isn't there, it just allows the defense to collapse in. It's almost like when LeBron wasn't hitting jump shots, when Dwayne Wade was not hitting jump shots on a consistent basis. So what the Heat needs to do is what they did last game and what they did this game. Nobody can contain LeBron James off the dribble. Dwayne Wade, in my opinion, only behind a few guys in the NBA, we're talking Durant, we're talking Kobe, only a few guys have a better move to the basket and then a step back J than Dwayne Wade has. So these guys just have to be as aggressive. And on the other side, defensively, this team needs to do what they need to do in terms of applying pressure on the basketball to create turnovers. If they do that, I think they can beat the Pacers. And, man, this Celtic Heat matchup is going to be tight, especially if Bosch isn't back. So that's my take on the Heat and what it means to them with Bosch not there.
So, D-Will, PhD talked a lot about the Bosch effect on the offensive end. He kind of got into a little bit how it affects their D. How have you been watching this develop, and why do you think the Pacers have been able to give them so much trouble with Bosch out of the lineup?
Well, I think it's allowed for their, you know, up until recently, it's allowed for their bigs to roam and clog up the lane and take away from LeBron's ability and Wade's ability to, you know, get to the rim. And when you don't have to worry about that person knocking down that shot, you can be a little bit more aggressive on defense. And, in those early games, they controlled the glass. They were very dominant and allowed them to control the transition of the Heat and force LeBron and Wade into shots that they wanted them to have. I think that's changed a little bit in these recent games with some adjustments in terms of how they've been running the offense and getting the bigs in more pick and roll space where they got to play out in space a little bit more in a way that they weren't as effective with. And then with Haslam knocking down that jump shot. So in some ways, Haslam's stepped up a little bit to try to fill that void enough to cause the bigs not to be as aggressive. So I think that had a lot to do with it. And the fact that, I mean, this is a guy who gets you 18 and 10. I mean, sometimes we get away from the fact that sometimes it's important to know that you can go in a game where somebody gets you 18 and 10. And I think so many times we were, Bosch before he came was 24 and 10. But sometimes when you're with other superstars, 18 and 10 has the effect of 24, 25 and 10 with the right superstars. And I think sometimes, you can discount that. And when you can chalk up that every night, it gives you at least a level of comfort about what you're going to get if you don't get some things for some other places. So I think that's what we're finding on it. And he helped out a little bit more on the defensive end. I mean, we're really critical sometimes with the matchups and the way he played defense. But he played defense well enough he was versatile enough that you could put him on different matchups on defense. And, he wasn't always great, but he was good enough to help create those opportunities for transition. So, a lot of people are saying that, they could have done, it would have been better off for them to lose Wade than Bosch because of what he creates. But, he definitely, his stock has gone up.
Yeah. Bosch is, I think you guys have both hit it on the head. He fits in offensively in a way that allows LeBron and D-Wade to do things that the other bigs that they have don't. When you're doing a pick and roll with Haslam, I'm not guarding him. If you're doing a pick and roll with Joel Anthony, I ain't guarding him either. But if it's Bosch out there now, again, as you said, PhD, you have to follow this man all the way out to almost near the 3-point line. So you can't really leave him. He's agile. He's quick. He can roll to the basket. And I think it's one of those classic instances of people get so fixated on what's not there, that they don't appreciate what is there.
Yeah.
And again, I'll raise my hand. Again, the crow is good. I got some greens. I got some macaroni and cheese to go with the crow. It's tasting good. And I'll raise my hand. I'm one of those people who kind of poo-poos what Bosch brings to the table. But without him there, you know, there's an obvious hole in what they do. And I think also defensively, you know, this is a team that prides itself on getting baskets off of turnovers. And one of the things that made them special in doing that is the length and quickness that they had across the board. When you take Bosch out of the lineup, Bosch is really the only guy over 6'10 that they have who is really worth anything. You got Curry and Pittman on the bench, but you're not going to get a whole lot from those guys, and they really don't fit that style of play when they talk about when they want to get out and extend the defense. Joel Anthony is good, but he's about 6'9". He can move pretty well, but he doesn't have that length. Haslam doesn't have that length. When you talk about a guy who's probably about 6'7", 6'8", max, he doesn't have that length to really get into the passing lanes and really close down the lane when you have D-Wade and LeBron really trying to pressure the ball out top. Ultimately, I think to win this series going forward, the Heat are going to need LeBron and D-Wade to have excellent performances night in, night out, for them to not only win this series but to continue to advance. Neither one of them can have a night off because there's no one else at all to pick up the slack. You know, when they have home games, that's going to help because we all know role players play better at home. But it's glaring that they need Bosch. And as much as, you know, again, people like me didn't really acknowledge his presence. His presence is very important to that team. Now, the question I want to ask you, D. Wills, is, you know, should they have played that Bill Duke clip from Minister Society after the Pacers lost game four? You know the clip I'm talking about. You know you messed up, right?
You know you messed up.
You know
the word, but you messed up. Yeah. They should have. And that's when you know it's kind of, we talk in higher education, we talk about, you know, why folks often don't perform at the levels they could. And as part of it is, you know, there's a thing called imposter syndrome. You know, you don't feel as though you belong, but you might project some whole other stuff. And that's what I felt with Indiana. That
yeah,
they were
like a hologram, right?
Yeah, like
talking about projections,
you know,
like a hologram. Like a hologram.
Because you know the cat who really mean business most times don't talk about it. Like, they just do it. You know, if they don't tell you they're gonna hit you, they just hit you, right? And you're like, oh, you can't believe you hit me, and, you know. And it's and I think when they let that go, you could see that they knew that they let something go. And now they're taking a beat. Now they don't open up, you know, and with the choke sign. You know, there's certain things you just don't do. Like, you just play. But you don't do anything to kind of wake up the sleeping giant. And all the things they try and seem to be orchestrated, artificial, it's not a part of their DNA in a way. And I think that right there tells me that they're still learning how to win. You know, and, you know, this is going to be a good lesson for them. You know, I think they got a bright future, but, you know, we learned a lot about Granger. He still is he's not an A-list star.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing B movies. If he was an actor, he's doing B movies. His movies are on DVD.
Straight to DVD.
You know, they might be 2 weeks in the theater. You see what I'm saying? He's not that guy who's gonna come in at the top of the money list on the weekend. You're the kind of guy like, did he have that movie? Was that movie in the theater? That's the guy he is, and we're learning that.
So I'm gonna pass it to PhD real quick. And PhD, you know, Danny Granger, and since we're on Danny Granger, let's go ahead and get on to Hologram Tupac for a moment. So. We got the Danny Granger situation in Indiana. Granger has been on the cusp of being a star for most of the last couple of years. he's been in Indiana for, what, 6 or 7 years now. Where do they go with him from here? Is this the end of the Danny Green era, or Danny Granger era, if they lose this particular, if they lose this Heat series? And he hasn't been a major factor to this point. If you're Indiana, do you begin to cut your losses and try and figure out a different direction to go, because you know this guy can't get you over the hump against the elite?
Yeah, it seems like Danny Granger is trying to change, you know, he's trying to be a chameleon, where this is a guy who's always been a scorer. You know, you look at the last couple of years, you know, before this year, this is a guy that's been averaging 24, 25, 26 points a game. You know, he gets you 1.8 rebounds and 3 assists, you know. But now this guy wants to be a defensive stopper. You know, he wants to put on his Deshaun Stevenson hat. Okay, and look, you know, and LeBron pretty much came out and said something pretty similar today to what he said about Stevenson. You know, hey man, you Soldier Boy, I'm Jay-Z. What are you doing? And so, in some ways, you know, I think Granger has hurt himself. You know, because
he's chingy.
Yeah, I mean, because this guy that was on. This was a guy that was on the last Olympic team. He wasn't getting a whole lot of tick, but he was one of those up and emerging guys for international play. Now, I mean, you know, LeBron pretty much go ice him out like Jordan did Isaiah. Listen, I'll play, but keep that Granger cat away from me. Okay. So I think he, like, this series, he's kind of at a crossroads. And in some ways, you know, it's just my opinion, of course. But it seems like his coach, somebody sold him a role. Listen, man, this is what we need for you to do in this series. We need for you to try to get in LeBron's head. That's okay for a guy who's a defensive stopper. That's okay to tell Rajon Bell that. That's okay to tell Bruce Bowen that. But not an emerging star. Nobody was ever going to tell Reggie Miller that. And tell Reggie to focus on that opposed to his scoring. Reggie may have been that, but his scoring always stayed stable. And if you look at Reggie's numbers, his best 3 years offensively were very similar to Granger's last 3 years. So in some ways, I think he's taken on this role that's not him. He just don't even look comfortable with it. Kind of like LeBron in the beginning of the season last year. You're not the bad guy, man. You don't even look comfortable with this. Talking about, I don't care. I'm just... No, you do. You do. So, I mean, that's the thing that's really been hurting me. I'm glad you gave me the space, as D. Will says, the space to let this out. Because it's really
been hurting me. Tell him why you mad.
Hey, man, you know, I mean, it was all right. It was hot. It was all right. You know. I got more John Blaze.
They denigrated not John Blaze like that. He's not John Blaze
right.
Like that. Oh, man. So, yeah, I think the Pacers, I agree with you, man. He's trying to be something he's not. He's trying to play a role, and I think he's trying to play that role because he knows he can't score on LeBron. I mean, his scoring is, when you're scoring, your scoring is way down. He's trying to find a way to contribute, and this isn't working for me. Get some rebounds, set some other guys up, figure out something else, but this whole act does not work for me. So, you know, I dub him Hologram Tupac. From this day forth on this show, Danny Granger will be known as Hologram Tupac. Because he fake thugging, man. He fake thugging, you know. So we have the Spurs and the Heat going into the playoffs were two teams that people had favored to keep it going. There's another team that's still left in the playoffs that I think was an early favorite at the beginning of the playoffs, and it's still looking as such to – and that's the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, we may be watching the birth of a dynasty in Oklahoma City. And in particular, in this moment in time, looking at this playoff run that they're going through, what we're seeing is if they come out of this successfully, they will have to have gone through every team of note and every champion pretty much of the last 10 to 15 years. When you look at was round one. They had to go through the Mavericks. Round two, the Lakers. The Western Conference Finals, they will have to get through the San Antonio Spurs. And we anticipate whoever comes out of the East will either be the Miami Heat or the Boston Celtics. All of these franchises have been in the finals at one point or another, and quite a few of them multiple times in the last 10 to 15 years. Now, if Oklahoma City successfully runs through this, that's a big if. It's not as big as an if as it could be, but it's still a big if because that's a lot. That's a tough road to hoe.
Right.
That's a tough road to get down on. So they will, I think, have exercised any possible demons that could have existed for them in one fell swoop, which would be, in my opinion, and I have to go back into the annals of basketball history to see if there's another example of a team, an up-and-coming team really doing it this way, this quickly, and kind of really just saying, nope, you're not going to get us, nope, you're not going to get us, because every dynasty had that hump that they had to get over. For the Lakers and the Celtics, they were each other's hump. And they, you know, they had to reconfigure teams, and then they get it right for a couple of years, and the other team would reconfigure, they get it right for a couple of years. And then you had those interconference rivalries, where you had, you know, the Houston Rockets constantly standing in, you know, the Utah Jazz of Karl Malone and Stockton, standing in their way all the time, and they couldn't get over that hump. Then when they finally got over that hump, they ran into Mike in the finals. Then you had, when Mike was younger, and the Bulls were trying to get over the hump against the Pistons, and the Pistons before them had to get over the hump against the Celtics. You know, so when you have teams that make those runs, there's always kind of the current bully. You got to knock them out. You got to get Debo. You know, Craig had to knock out Debo for that movie to end the right way. And, you know, is OKC going to knock out every Debo on the block? Because that's what they're going to have to do to win the finals this year. And if they do that, then they will be dancing in the streets with Smokey. They'll be dancing in the streets with OKC with Smokey. Rand can get his chain back. He can get his bike back. You know what I'm saying? So, OKC, I mean, D. Wills, pontificate on that one for the moment. Express yourself. What do you think about this OKC team?
I am very impressed with them. I'll start with that. But I think it's kind of like a young Tampa. It's kind of like Alvarez beating – he's a good young champ coming up. You can still see he has some places to grow. If you grow, you can see he can be great. But just because he might have beaten De La Hoya in Mosley, it's hard for me to anoint. Those are great champions, but they're not what they were. So OKC – you know, yes, they beat Dallas, but Dallas is a shell of themselves. Yeah, they beat the Lakers, but the Lakers are really a shell of themselves. And, you know, this test they'll have against San Antonio will probably be, I would say, the most formidable, like, I would say, at full blazing guns. If they win this one, that's impressive. But I think their longevity is going to depend on their ability to mature, particularly offensively. You know, I think their longevity will come with their ability to develop more of a motion offense. In my mind, something more triangle, where I think against elite teams, and I think this is where they might struggle against San Antonio, the Lakers just didn't have that one piece to do it. They're not going to just get away with running, you know, pick and rolls and getting in space where they can just shoot, jump up. They're going to make Westbrook make plays, where his turnovers would come over. So I think when they develop an offense that allows for them to have side-to-side motion, where they're moving that ball a little bit more, I think that's where they're going to be over the long haul tough to stop. And I think that's going to come with their maturity. The defensive end, I think they're already mature. I think they get after it. They play hard on defense, and they get out and run. I think they've made a commitment, and that has a lot to do with Coach Brooks. So that's how I see them. You know, when I thought about this, is that this run has been impressive, but it's like they fought against Mosley and Oscar De La Hoya late in their career. And now they're going up against, they may be going up against Mayweather. You know, possibly Pacquiao right now. And now we're going to really see if all that training's paid off. And if they get through that, then you got to say these kids are on the way to having a dynasty.
Okay, okay. So the series starts on Saturday. The series starts on Saturday. PhD, give us just a brief handicap of what you think, how these two teams stack up against each other.
Whew. Well, D. Wills is on fire. I'm going to ask him, do you want the rock back? Do you want me to dump it back? Do you want me to dump it back in the post to you? You're on fire.
If you want me, I'm like buying them, and I need it again. I can close
okay.
if I want me to. You want me to dump it back? I'll take it.
All right.
You know,
I'm dumping it back down to you. You're on fire. Go right ahead.
Let me keep on going. I love that question. And what I see, I mean, if you watch San Antonio forces you, and I think Kenny Smith did this right, you know, it's kind of like my old defensive coordinator used to do. He said, you can win championships if you can understand what an offense top three plays are. If you can make them go, especially in high school, go to the fourth option of what they do best, you're going to win. Because most people can't sustain and win on what they do best with that fourth option. And if you can take away their best three plays, then you got them. And I think if you watch San Antonio, they force you to go to your fourth best option offensively. They just do it. And I believe that is where – I think the series is going to go about six. I just think that OKC is that talented. Durant is going to explode on something. But I think San Antonio gets them in like six or seven. And it's because of what I just said. I don't know if OKC offensively is sophisticated enough to make those kind of adjustments when they got to go to four. San Antonio can go to their fourth best option. If you were to force them to go to their fourth best option, it would feel like it's still their first, right? Because of what you just said about their roster. They can play any style you want to play. And nobody's going to out – you're not – not only does Popovich have a talented roster, but now he's usually the best coach on the floor. So now he's the best coach on the floor with the most depth. He's going to be tough to beat. You need somebody – you need two guys like LeBron in to do things that you just can't coach against to beat them. And I'm not sure that both Durant and Westbrook are at that point where they can do that on a consistent basis against the kind of defensive pressure they're going to face with San Antonio.
Wow.
Mm. Yep.
The OKC. Okay, hey, you got it, man. You held it down. So you like San Antonio in that series. PhD, who you like in that series? You don't have to go
like
super
San Antonio
down,
as well. Okay, San
it's
Antonio.
It's on tape.
Yeah.
It's on tape. I'm gonna go out on a limb. I feel you, D. Wills, with OKC and the lack of sophistication. A lot of times, their late shot clock offense is Westbrook at the top of the key, dribbling his brains out, or Durant dribbling his brains out at the key. I like San Antonio, too. I like San Antonio, too, in this one. They're just too diverse. There's always a 6'7" dude open somewhere in the corner, ready to shoot a three, and he never misses. They got like 8'6", 7" dudes. Just be open.
Is Richard Jefferson still playing?
Yeah, he's still playing, but he's not with the Spurs. He's in Golden State.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's how good they are. I don't even know if they missed. You got people like Blair who started at the beginning of the season, and you don't even see him.
Right.
That's right.
Thiago Splitter. You know, he gives them eight, nine minutes. You know, he was a starter at one point in the season. It wasn't like he was a bum starter. He was an effective guy.
Yeah.
So, I have San Antonio
like,
taking it all this year.
Wow.
Yeah, I got him taking it all. I think And one of the reasons I do is because watching the way they contain Chris Paul was kind of scary. Because CP3 yeah. is one of the smartest, most cerebral basketball players ever. And they baffled him at times where he just couldn't figure out how they were guarding him and what to do against it. And how to utilize his teammates to get him out of it. And it was so effective. I mean, it's kind of like how you deal with Brady, where you don't rush him. You can just kind of zone him up and keep everything in front of you and let him dink and dunk, mm-hmm. and then you try to make a play. I mean, it basically just kept CP3 in this little bubble. It was crazy. But I think that's what they'll do to guys like, because with Miami and with Oklahoma City, you always know who's going to have the ball. And when you can predict who's going to have the ball, if you can predict it, you can prevent it. You can slow it down, you know. And you know Brian's going to have it. You know D-Wade's going to have it. And you know where they're going to get it. You know where they want it. You know where they're best from. And you know where they're weak from. And Pop is going to use all that information. He's going to use all that intel to come up with a real solid game plan. And he's got the guys to pull it off. Again, he's got like 8, 9, 6, 7 dudes. To throw out LeBron and D-Wade, who can all move their feet, who all play good defense. They all have bought into the health principles that he teaches. So, and the thing about San Antonio is you don't know who's gonna get you. You don't know who's going to get you. Is it going to be Tony Parker penetrating? Is Ginobili open somewhere? Is Duncan rolling to the basket on the screen and roll? You know, and they have so many players that free those three up to just be themselves. They don't have to do other stuff that they don't need to. You got D.L. who can play at the high post, and play at the pinch post and move the ball around. Blair can be a dog on the board. Jackson can make shots. You know, Green and Leonard hit open threes like it's nobody's business. And that's really all you ask them to do is play within yourself. That's a scary team. That's just, again, if they stay in a different market, we'd be talking about how great this team is way more than people give them credit for. Now, OKC, to get to play the Spurs, though, OKC had to knock off the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't know if you had a chance to hear Kobe Bryant earlier today, but Kobe came out, he was a little high. He's been getting agitated with reporters quite a bit lately. One reporter asked Kobe, was this kind of the the end of the run in L.A.? And Kobe basically told him, no, this is not. We're not going to be the Detroit Pistons and just kind of go quietly and never come back. You know, Kobe wasn't having that. He wasn't having that talk. Now, on the other side of the spectrum, yeah, Andrew Bynum, who was asked about, you know, where does he see himself playing next year, and he basically was like, I really don't care where I play. If it's here, great. If it's not here, I don't care. And he's real flippant, real Bynum-y. You know what I mean? What can the Lakers do? I mean, Kobe's on the downside. You got Bynum acting a fool. You got Ron Artest, who seems like the only cat who's actually.
He's the only sane one in the interview.
Exactly. When you got a cat named Meta World Peace as your stability, your stable guy, you got a problem, all right? Gasol disappeared after the game. They interviewed Gasol, and he's like, well, you know, they want me to be aggressive, but I've been the third option all season, and they're trying to facilitate, and he don't know what to say. He's confused. Where did they go? PhD, help the Laker fans out, because I know they need some therapy right now. So we got the graduate. He's going to give us a therapy session real quick.
Man, it's a mess out there. It is certainly a mess out there. And, you know, it's kind of like when you had too many cooks in the kitchen. Okay? You got too many cooks in the kitchen, and the actual head chef has limited power, has limited authority. And that head chef in this situation is Mike Brown. Okay? You got Kobe Bryant in the kitchen. You got Magic Johnson from ESPN Studios in the kitchen with Impact. Okay, you got Bynum trying to stay in the kitchen. You know, okay, I made the All-Star game. Wait a minute, I'm in the kitchen. Let me do everything I can to stay in it. Okay? And then you got Gasol Gasol, whatever, you got him, you know. I ain't going to try to, I mean, there's no analogy for this cat. It's like, what happened to you? What happened to you? What happened to you? What happened to you? You used to be you, now you're something else. So, man, I think they need to get all that figured out, but in all honesty, in all truthfulness, in all seriousness, I think this core of Bryant, Gasol, Bynum, and Coach Brown is a strong championship core. They need to strengthen their supporting staff, okay? The Bulls got really good when Pippen stepped up, but also when John Paxson, okay, when B.J. Armstrong, when these guys kind of stepped up into their role. And so they need a three guy who can do more. Somebody who can, I mean, really, Trevor Ariza, I don't know why he ever left. You know, I mean, I know why he left.
Yeah, I think that was a bad move.
Why he left. You know, Ariza was great. Ariza was a guy that could defend. He could run. He could stick that open three. They need a guy like that. You know, and Devin Eubanks looks like Ariza, but he doesn't play like Ariza. Okay. Okay, so, I mean, here's the challenge for Mike Brown, and I have confidence in him because I saw him do it in Cleveland. Find guys to fill holes. Look at your Vera Giles, your Booby Gibsons, guys that could just step in and play certain roles. And in some ways, I wish Mike Brown would have had a full training camp. It's tough to follow a legend like Phil Jackson, who, because of who he is, just came with instant credibility and feedback acceptance because of who he is and what he's accomplished. Mike Brown he really didn't have a shot, man. I mean, you got a shortened season, you got limited practice time, and you just kind of, you know, you had this whole Chris Paul thing at the beginning of the season. And in some ways, I think that really, really messed up things for the Lakers just from the get-go.
All right. I'm chewing on it right now. That was a pretty in-depth assessment. I dig what you're saying about Mike Brown, man. I think Laker, the Laker fan base, the Laker greats, they have to move the goalpost a little bit as far as constantly always expecting a title. When Magic came out and said that Mike Brown needed to be fired, I thought that was a ridiculous statement. I mean, you had a team that, again, nobody outside of L.A. maybe was expecting Bynum to play as well as he did this year, where he took a bit of a leap. You know, he took a leap into that next level, and he solidified himself as probably the second best center in the league, with the potential to become the best. We've always kind of thought he had that potential, but we had never seen it for a full season. So this year he takes that step. He starts to step up. But if not for that jump that he made, they're a 6 or 7 seed. I mean, if Bynum has been Bynum of the last couple of years where, you know, he's very inconsistent, which is what he kind of reverted to in the playoffs a little bit, where he's very inconsistent. He's a little bit flighty as far as his focus. Then you got what you got. So I think Mike Brown maxed out what he had. When you're looking at, and I, you know, and later in the Five on the Black Hand Side, I've really dug into this Lakers roster today. So there's not a whole lot there. They lucked up and got Jordan Hill for nothing. I mean, they got him for a bag of duct tape from Houston. And he turned out to be a ball player. I don't know if they were thinking that they were going to get what they got out of him when they got him. They had to take somebody. They had to take, like, some sort of salary in the trade, and they took back what they could. So getting him has helped. But there just isn't a lot of depth. I think you're right. Gasol, Bynum and Kobe are a good foundation for a championship caliber team. The problem with that is that Kobe's making $28 million next year, Gasol's gonna make $19 million, and Bynum's gonna make $17 million. And you got Ron making or Meta making $7 million. That's a whole lot of cash with a shrinking salary cap. wrapped up in four guys. I mean, that is, so they don't have a lot of wiggle room as far as bringing in people.
And I would say that there's a couple things here. You have the Lakers have always been represented by the face of their front office in terms of Dr. Buss and the investment in championships. Now you have a second-generation Buss leading it who's changed the strategy a little bit. So you have that, which created this friction at the beginning of the season, right? And then at the same time, you have a new coach coming in. Now, one of the strategic errors that I think Mike Brown made, Mike Brown has to think of himself as a defensive coordinator, kind of like Phil, who needed – Phil understood the role of Tex Winters. Phil was a great manager, right, and a leader. And so one of the things in terms of Mike Brown's maturation as a coach, what he should have realized in his short time, that sometimes you start with what people know. And it would have been to his benefit to maintain aspects of the triangle. And for two reasons, what we saw last night, the triangle did a couple things. I've been having a lot of good conversations with some Laker fans, but the triangle does a couple things. The triangle allows Powell, who was a great all-around player, to be Powell. It allows for him to get in space. It allows for him to play near the basket when he needs to, play out when he needs to. It has a discipline to it. The other thing it does, it defends Kobe against his weakness. It's like a drug. It's like a drug addict. We saw it last night. He just basically OD'd. He said, forget it. I'm going to the alley. And I'm going to shoot. He just, and unless you, they're not going to win a championship unless you come with an offensive structure that forces Kobe to understand the change in the guard. Kobe is kind of like John Elway not realizing he has Terrell Davis. And Bynum is Terrell Davis. And he hasn't quite realized that you just can't drop back and throw 40 times. His hands are broken up. He can't shoot the way. He shoots a line drive shot. You know, I talk to a lot of Laker fans, people who know that, close to him. Hands are broken up. And so there are things, if you notice, they lost that game. They lost each of those games because they failed to go to Bynum down in the fourth quarter. On simple stuff, all they did was fronting. All three of us played basketball. Fronting doesn't kill you. You rotate, get the right angle, you go over the top. If you notice, even with the Heat, they were fronting Wade, and LeBron was still able to get the angle, get it over the top, going towards the rim. We all learned this back in sixth grade, right? When somebody fronts, how to get the ball to them. So simple things that you need to create an opportunity where they need to be thinking offensively, things that allow for these players to maximize what they do best. And that always hasn't been Mike Brown's strength. And he needs to get somebody to come in and help with offense in the same way that Doc Rivers has somebody helping him with the defense.
That's a lot, man. That's a lot. No, you on fire tonight, D. He's got a few clips. He just got a few clips right there, man. He's got a few clips, man. He just broke the Lakers down. You know, 40
years
out.
Yeah. You know, some nights you just have to just feed the cat the rock. I mean, these are the nights where Isaiah and Dumars just say, hey, Vinny's hot. Let's just get it to him. Let's keep it with him. Okay?
Run it back. I think you're dead on, though, with Kobe and you know, he gets like kooky. He's from Jack City, man. He get a couple J's up, man, and they start feeling, you start getting good to him, and he just be calling him, man. Just be calling him.
Yeah.
When he be calling, he got to shoot it. He can't help it, man, you know.
I was killing on Twitter last night, man. I was just like, he's killing me with that. And the commentators aren't saying it. Nobody's talking about it today. It's like, come on. You know, we know what the problem is. And Kobe, you're not going to win if you're scoring 40 points. You're not that old Kobe anymore.
See, Kobe's Kobe's so army right now that nobody wants to say that to him. Ain't no telling what kind of response you're going to get.
Yeah.
Because remember after the first game of the series, it was like, Kobe, do you think you guys can guard the Thunder? And he was like, nah. We can't guard him. Just mad.
Oh my God.
I mean, it is one of those questions, like, what do you expect me to say? But at the same time, Kobe was just like, I'm through with this. So we're going to follow our whole philosophy. We're going to keep it with the high hand. D. Wills, 76ers, Celtics. Who's winning and why?
Celtics are going to win. And a lot of it is just Sixers are learning how to win. You know, they have to – they're working too hard to score. They allow – it's kind of like we talked about, you know, Duke's quote, you know, they had them and then they just let them out the gate. And Garnett is like, you know, he better make sure he doesn't get tested because they're going to test him for something. Nobody plays as well at that age. I'm not saying nothing doing going on, but he just – between Garnett and Duncan, it's like these guys went back to the feature on them. And they just got a lot of energy. I think they're fine in their way. I just think that the Celtics are going to close this out just because they know how to win. And the 76ers are learning how to win. And this is what, you know, this is what Collins does. He gets these guys to believe. I think if they can get a couple more pieces. And I think it's good to have, you know, stuff coming from every area. But at some point, you got to have somebody who can define the moment down the stretch. And Iguodala, I think, is great. But he's a second scorer. He's a third scorer, great defender. If you get them a true go-to guy down the stretch with him kind of playing Robin to the Batman, you know, they got something. But I don't think they're there yet. I think they're just going to get – it's like the old guy at the court that just walk you down. You don't know why he's doing it to you. You know, you're just like, how is he keeping the court? You know, you mad, too. You're like, we should be on the court. It's like the three old guys that just – they don't run four games on us. And they, you know, they're 10 years older than us. You just don't understand what's happening to you because you haven't learned how to play from the neck up. And I think that's what's going on. They keep going back like, there's no way in the world these cats should be beating us. But they just haven't figured out that some of the stuff is just from the neck up. It's the stuff you just going to learn. And so I think the Celtics are going to prove to just be too much.
Now, where are you on Evan Turner? What's your assessment of his performance in this playoff? Because I think they're waiting on him to become something, and not quite sure what he's going to be.
It's hard because of the way they brought him in. And it's hard because, and, you know, Evan is so crazy because in college he had that dog. Didn't y'all feel like he had that dog in his game in college?
Yeah.
And it seems he went to Philly, and I don't know if something happened there. I don't know if it's about being in Philadelphia, because Philadelphia fans can be crazy. Being in Philly could be crazy. You know, Freeway and everybody else up in there. It could be crazy up in there. And I don't know if it's that element, but it doesn't feel like he got his swag. And sometimes that's the one downside of Collins. Sometimes he might be beating down some young cats. But it doesn't seem like he's just finding his voice and playing. And there's times where I just think you can see he's the most complete player on the court, on their squad, in terms of knowing how to play, knowing to get there. It just, he's not assertive enough. And I don't know why. I think sometimes Collins just needs to tell him to take. Tonight you better take 23 shots. If you don't, I'm taking you out. I mean, he got to get him to be a little bit more aggressive because he got the skill set to do it. But I don't know what to make of him. I think the jury's still out. I don't think he's a bust. I just, the way they built their team, and they had some other young players who emerged who were putting it up that he can't find his spot. You know, you got guys like Meeks who brought their game at times, can go for 25. You know, and so I think it's just been kind of hard for him to find his space. I think if they move some of those guys, they got some pieces to move. If they're really committed to him, they might be able to move some, because they got some assets to move. And to bring some veterans in, then that might allow for him to emerge a little bit more. I think that's what's going to have to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're going to end this episode of the Funky Editorial. To the next episode, we're going to keep it way funky.
That was hot. D Wills held us down in that one. So we keep it real simple around here. You got a hot hand, you work them till the buzzer goes off. So D Wills,
right.
Over the past couple of months, we've been working through our top 20 hip hop songs of all time. Right now, D Wills, the hot hand, microwaving it, is going to give us his top 5 hip hop songs of all time.
I want to say, fellas, first of all, I love the list we've been coming up with. This one is probably the one that stressed me the most. I could see myself, if we were to do this in 2 or 3 months, to maybe even have a different list. I mean, I've opened up and just listened to y'all. It's been, you know, a pleasure to kind of work through this together on this. And in some ways, my top 5 reflect my own journey through hip-hop. And also things that kind of were life-changing moments for me. And why I think of these songs as kind of my top 5 all time. So at number 5, we got Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight. And part of this song is you really can't tell the story of hip-hop without it. It was a crossover tune. You play it now and people still kind of will sing along with it and kind of go. And it was kind of that bridge between disco era in the hip hop in a way that a very kind of simple kind of approach to the game that kind of just opened up hip hop, I believe, beginning to a broader audience. At number 4, this is my BDP, The Bridge Is Over. This is a song that shut down a borough. It's the only song in hip hop that shut down a borough. And that world recognizes that it shut it down in a way that was just so emphatic. It's like a Dominique tip dunk, and you just remember it. You just go, "Ooh, that was nasty." But
yeah.
To me, you have very few songs that shut folks down, and that was a song that shut it down in a way that just was emphatic. I mean, I love the 50 Cent interview with, you know, he's from Jamaica, Queens, and he just reminisces on it. He just laughed because he knew it shut folks down. And so I love that song at number 4. Number 3 is The Message, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious 5. This is a song that reminded folks, let people know that hip-hop had a social justice message to it. In a way that it could be compelling. And to me, this was one of my early songs that I listened to hip-hop that really helped me understand. And these next couple songs are that way, in a way that as we talk about, you know, the Black CNN, in a way that gave folks from the Midwest insight into a life in New York City and things that we could relate to, but also things that we hadn't even thought about. And I thought that, to me, is a very compelling song at number 3. Number 2, I remember when this album, see, one of the things about hip-hop, the early folks in hip-hop, the college radio, particularly when I was going to college in the 80s, got a lot of music before it got to the streets. It was college radio was a distribution space. So I was working. I had a show. We had a show called Step Into the AM. And so we used to get a lot of these records early. And I remember when N.W.A. album came across, and I would listen to Straight Outta Compton for the first time. It was a shift, because hip hop had been such a New York focused thing that in a way I'm like, I didn't even know what Compton, California was, but it was such, it came with such a voice and such a passion, and it gave insight to a whole part of life and culture that I hadn't even conceived as someone growing up in the Midwest. This is such a powerful song for me. And then number 1, Fight the Power, Public Enemy.
Wow.
If you think about when this song came out, it was at a time when, particularly for African Americans growing up in the community, where people were taking a beating. the national policy around how things were handled in terms of social services, in terms of support to communities, in terms of war on drugs, in terms of a whole kind of dynamic that was playing. And out of nowhere came this voice that said, you know, you have the right to take this back, and spoke for folks who had no voice. And every time I play Fight the Power, it's like I'm banging on my roof, and in the video it's just out cold. But it was a kind of song that just every time you hear it reminds you of a responsibility that hip hop can have to being a voice for communities that don't have voice. So that's my top five.
Man, heavy as a ton of bricks. Boy,
yeah.
Say, where do we start? So your number five. What was your number five again?
Rapper's Delight.
Rapper's Delight. I think that's appropriate. I have no issues with that. I think the way you set that up, you can't tell the history of hip hop without mentioning and giving a significant amount of time to Rapper's Delight. You can't. I love the inclusion of Bridges Over. That is the quintessential battle record, and I think when you talk about, you know, KRS already wrote the blueprint.
Yeah,
to steal lines from another battle record. You know, that is the blueprint. That is the blueprint of a battle record. You know, that's the beta of Ether. It's the beta of the Takeover. It's the beta of, you know, second round knockout, 4-3-2-1, whatever you want to put it, man. Whatever disc cut you want to come up with, the Bridge is Over is the beta of it. It was the one that, it was the first one that got it, where it's like, yo, you just murked him. Successfully murked an entire borough, as you said. And then for me, The Message, I think it's such an underrated record. It's such an underrated record. It's so hard as far as the lyrical content. It's so hard-hitting. It's so raw. But yet it is so poetic. When you have lines like, a child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind, God is smiling on you, but he's frowning on you too, because only God knows what you will go through.
That's
something that Maya Angelou could have wrote.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Like that is hard. It's rooted in reality, but it is so poetic and graceful. I love that song. Love that song to this day. And you'll see where it stands on my list when we get there. But great inclusion. Every time I hear Fight the Power, man, I feel like that 8-year-old again, man, back in 88 when it dropped. I feel like I'm 8. You know what I'm saying? Running around a block party. You know what I'm saying? And just, you know, watching everybody had the medallions. And it signified an era where, you're right, black people were having it rough, but there was also a sense of figuring out who we were. And that exploration of who we were as a culture, that generation of hip-hop kids were going through that, and that sense of community. That I think when you talk about our generation, a lot of that sense of community and that sense of giving back and that sense of not selling out and that sense of responsibility to the greater whole is rooted in a lot of the Public Enemies, the X-Clans, you know, groups like that really ingrained that in us, that, you know, yeah, you want to come up, yeah, you want to make it, but you don't want to make it at the expense of your community. You don't want to make it at the expense of people who look like you. You know what I mean? And you don't want to do things that are going to reflect poorly upon where you come from, and you can't forget where you come from. And everywhere you go, you got to represent where you come from, and you can't let nobody pull one over on you. You know, those are some of the main mores and values from that era, and that song, Fight the Power, really was one of those songs that really stoked those fires for people. That's all I got to say. Excellent top five.
Thank you.
So yeah, man, that's a banging top five. So that's D-Wills top five. Recap it real quick for the people, D-Wills.
All right, at number four, at number five, Rapper's Delight. Number four, The Bridge Is Over. Number three, The Message. Number two, Straight Outta Compton. And number one, Fight the Power.
All right. So, if you're listening out there, and again, you listen to the Real Sports Guy, give him a round of applause. Round of applause. Again, if you're listening out there, you listen to the Real Sports Guy. Standing ovation. RealSportsGuys.com. If you have any issues with D-Will's top five, hit us up on Facebook. Hit us up on Twitter. RealSportsGuys, RealSportsGuys.com. RSG Renegade Radio. Hit us up. Get at us. We'll debate with you all day. I think that's airtight. You know, as we say in the intro, you can't gripe about – you can't. There's a lot of things you can gripe about. You can't gripe about that top five. All right? You just can't. You just can't. So, with that said, we're talking top five. Let's get into our own little top five. A thing we like to call five on the black hand side. I'm gonna hit it.
Five, on the black hand side.
Yes, that's one of those fierce, you know, those real hand stinging pat, pat, pat. One of those handshakes that you get from an old school cat. But it's like, dog, you do not have to hit my hand that hard.
Right.
Hey, calm down, young blood. Some kind of a square. Oh, man. Great to be back. Great to be back. We're having a good time. Again, you listen to the Real Sports Guys. www.realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. Yeah, in with us on the Five on the Black Hand Side. This week, we're going to find a home for Dwight Around Your Mouth Howard. Now, in the Five on the Black Hand Side, we got five destinations. We were each assigned a destination to figure out how this particular franchise and team could acquire the services of Dwight Around Your Mouth Howard. All right. First up, PhD. He was assigned the newly minted Brooklyn Nets. I passed the ball. PhD, assess the situation.
Woo-wee. Now, this scenario was a lot cleaner before your boy Darren Williams came out either this morning or last night pretty much saying that I'm going to test the free agent market. Now, you know what that means. I have no intentions of returning. So, you know, so, I mean, this whole situation has changed quite a bit. So I went in the lab and cooked up a scenario for Brooklyn. So I think there are a couple of options. Dwight Howard, I believe he resigned and he has a player option for next year. Is that correct?
Yeah, he waived his option next year. So this year he can't become a free agent. So he's got one more year, and then at the end of next year, if he doesn't re-sign, he becomes a free agent.
All right. So this is what I'm looking at. I can see him in Brooklyn because Brooklyn has some cap space. They have some cap space, but they have limited assets. And that's kind of putting it kindly. That's putting it very kind.
Here, man, nice.
So I think their best asset right now is Brook Lopez. Assuming, you know, again, Darren Williams isn't going to be under contract. That's the assumption. I think if you package Lopez and Chris Humphreys for Dwight Howard, I think that's the way to get him to Brooklyn. Now, for Howard, he's got to be thinking, well, why do I want to go to Brooklyn if I'm going to be playing with that roster? And so I think that New Jersey looks at getting Carmelo Anthony. And you look at Carmelo, Dwight Howard. If you have Carmelo and Dwight Howard, you might have a chance of getting Williams back. So that's my Brooklyn scenario.
Wow. So you got the Nets getting Carmelo from the Knicks and B12?
Yeah, and the Nets would not have a draft pick until 2050. They will mortgage their future. They will literally mortgage their future. Okay. And, you
okay.
Know, if you look at their roster, it can happen. Chris Humphries is making $9 million. Williams is pretty much at the max deal. So assume that these two are going to be gone. Brook Lopez at the tail end of his rookie deal, so he's still not getting paid. You move Gerald Wallace, and perhaps you get an asset back in Gerald Wallace, or this is how you get, you know, this is the key piece of the New York Knicks move, moving him to New York and getting Carmelo back in return, and also moving Wallace in addition to a couple of other draft picks. I think you may even be able to get Lopez and Howard straight up, considering if Lopez agrees to sign an extension. And just, you know, Dwight Howard has really put the Orlando Magic in a poor leverage situation. So I don't think they're going to get fair market value for D12.
You're right about that. They're not going to get full market value for D12. They're going to kind of be – it's going to be an interesting situation because it's almost like they're going to be either held – if I'm Orlando, I trade them in the offseason and get it done with. I really
yes.
do. If he's not gonna say he's gonna sign, you gotta get rid of him. Because if you go into the regular season with him on your roster, the longer you have him on your roster in the regular season, the less likely you're gonna get a good deal. You're gonna get the best deal you can up front. Now, my only question is, what's that?
I should have told you, Marcus, before I started.
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It's
getting the people going.
That is a very provocative scenario, because if that happens, the power of the NBA will definitely shift, and that will be a huge splash for that franchise opening up that new building if that scenario comes to fruition. That's definitely a big move. My question would be, would the Knicks give up Carmelo for Gerald Wallace and some spare parts? That would be my question.
Yeah. For me, hopefully it's clear to the Knicks that they can't win with the current combination of Amari and Carmelo. It just won't happen. It just won't happen.
I agree.
With this current setup. They need a quality point guard, and I think with a good point guard, and maybe even you make a move to get Nash for another year or two. You put with a quality point guard, this brings up, like, this picks up the game of Stoudemire. And you already have a defensive player of the year there in Chandler. So to me, Anthony is kind of that missing piece that doesn't fit in. It's sexy, it looks good, but it doesn't translate to wins.
It doesn't translate to anything, any language. It just don't translate. It's big Latin. Okay. So that gets Dwight Howard to Brooklyn. It teams him up with Carmelo and Deron Williams, and that's a championship caliber team. If that happens, we're looking at some serious. Depending upon what they come, you got your bases covered because I think they fit together pretty well. You have a big man who doesn't need the ball to be effective and have an impact on the game. You have a guy like Carmelo who scores the basketball the way he does. And then you have a setup man who can get Carmelo the ball and get Carmelo easy baskets. That's the one thing Carmelo's never really played with, is a guy who can get him easy buckets. He has to work for his in ISO situations. And I think if you put him with a point guard who could get him the ball and get him a few easy buckets here and there, you know, you might see a different kind of an impact out of this game on the scoreboard. So we're going to go into number two, the Dallas Mavericks. D. Wills, you've been given the task of bringing Dwight Howard to Dallas. How did you get it done, man?
I've been researching and looking at this. They don't have the assets to do a trade. So their only hope is to get into free agency. The one thing they are doing is they're clearing cap room. And so they may have an opportunity where they can get, with the right scenario, get Deron Williams. And then bring Dwight in free agency. I think that's the way their plan of doing it. It's not a sound plan, but they just their roster just doesn't have the assets. I mean, you know, if you go down their roster, it's just like it's a bunch of junk bonds. So, you know, there's nothing that you can that's value coming back. You know, Dirk's not going anywhere. Odom went crazy. So, you know, when you look at this, everybody else is either old or, I mean, they just don't have any assets to do a trade. So they have to wait. They have to hope that he goes through the season and comes into free agency, and they have the ability through the cap room they created to get Darren and to get him in free agency and get him to Dallas. That's the best way that they have to do it.
All right. All right. So what we're looking at is they have to get him through free agency. The first shoe that has to drop is they have to get Darren Williams. I think that's a very strong possibility. He's from Dallas. But that aside, that's not even the best selling point. You know, with these guys who are looking to leave and go to franchises and find places who are kind of, you know, opting out, the one thing I think they're all looking for is a management team that they know is going to do whatever it takes to put them in position to win a championship. And there's one management team that has proven that no matter how crazy it is, no matter how outside the box it is, no matter how much it costs, they're going to get it done if they think it's going to be a move that's going to get them a championship. And that's Mark Cuban's front office. That's why I think he has a great chance of landing Darren Williams, because as great as much money as Prokhorov has, the Russian guy, as much money as the Russian has, at the end of the day, he doesn't have the track record that Cuban has of going out there and doing, sometimes to his detriment, but still going out there and getting it done. If there's a deal to be made, he's going to figure out how to get it done. And if there's a price to be paid, he's going to pay it.
Even with Odom, I mean, people don't put that on Cuban. I mean, Cuban did everything he tried to do to make that deal work. And on the surface, you know, if Odom had things together, he's a good fit for that team to do so, to create some options. So you're right. I mean, he has a track record of making it happen. They know he's down. He's a player's owner. And they got in Carlisle, they got a legitimate championship level coach who knows how to work the strategy. So I think that's a sell for Darren Williams. Plus you got Dirk, you got another superstar who can put some numbers up, you know, and you got Terry. So you put him in with that, you know, and they'll revamp some other aspects of their roster. I mean, they can compete a little bit next year without Dwight, enough to sell Dwight on the fact that we can get over the top.
Right. Absolutely. I think that is a scary place that if you're a Heat fan, if you're a Spurs fan, a fan of the Bulls or the Thunder, you don't want that to happen, because if it happens, again, the power will shift. The power will absolutely shift to wherever those players wind up, and it will change the landscape of the elite tier of NBA teams.
Yeah, I mean, to now, me, Chandler protected the basket, but Dwight protects the basket and scores. You think about Dirk being able to roam.
Yeah. Or even just playing those zones that Carlisle likes to implement. Playing a zone with a guy like Dwight in the middle of it, it's kind of scary.
It's scary.
Yeah, you know, that's a bit frightening. That's a bit frightening. So we're going to move into our number three. Number three, I got this one, and that's the Los Angeles Lakers. So how do I have the Lakers acquiring Dwight Howard? I had to fire up. I had to put some oil on and fire up the NBA trade machine on ESPN.com. So I got the trade machine going. Man, I was trying to – the Lakers roster, their cap situation is garbation. I mean, it's horrible, man. Their cap situation is awful. So I'm trying to figure out a scenario in which they could – because it's not going to happen through free agency.
They're not. Dallas and Brooklyn both will have cap space that the Lakers win. The Lakers aren't going to see cap space for the next 10 years. You talk about Brooklyn not having draft picks until 2050. The Lakers won't have cap space till 2050. So we had to orchestrate something through trade. So trying to figure out something straight up. Again, the Lakers really don't have any trade chips whatsoever. I mean, they have Gasol and Bynum, but those two alone aren't going to get you a Dwight Howard because they couldn't win a championship with Kobe, let alone win a championship without Kobe. So I didn't think that was going to work. So I pulled in a third team, all right? I got a little crafty. I pulled in a third team. We got the Lakers in Orlando. I brought in the Denver Nuggets. The Denver Nuggets had some assets that we could move. So this is what the deal looks like. The Los Angeles Lakers get Dwight Howard, J.J. Redick, and Al Harrington. They absorb Redick and Harrington with their trade exemption that they got from the Odom deal. So they absorb that up. So that's what they come away with, Dwight Howard, J.J. Redick, Al Harrington. Denver, they get Pau Gasol and Orlando's draft pick in 2013. So they get Orlando's draft pick next year. Orlando, they get Andrew Bynum, Danilo Gallinari, Corey Brewer, Kosta Koufos, and Denver owns New York's pick in 2014, so Orlando get that. So this is what the rosters look like after my trade, all right? You got the Lakers with a starting five of Dwight Howard, Al Harrington, Meta World Peace, Kobe Bryant, Ramon Sessions, J.J. Redick coming off the bench, Jordan Hill coming off the bench, and then Steve Blake. So that's their eight-man rotation right there. Still not amazing. The Lakers still would have a lot more work to do, but they have the foundation of Bryant and Howard. They'd have another star in total that they could continue to try and build around, and they could begin to start to plan for a life after Kobe. So that's what the Lakers would get out of the deal. Denver would have a starting five of Gasol, JaVale McGee, Wilson Chandler, Aaron Aflalo, Ty Lawson, with Kenny Faried, Miles Goff, and Rudy Fernandez rounding out their top eight. That's a team that I think would compete, be a 4-5 seed for the next 2 or 3 years. They probably would never crack elite level, but they would sell tickets in Denver. People would really like the team. It'd be exciting. You have a similar situation where you have 2 7-footers and McGee and Gasol. Chandler, I think, is a really good player who, you know, is going to continue to blossom and continue to develop. He's only 25 years old, so he's still got some room to grow. Ty Lawson is a great point guard. I think that's a very competitive team, and that would be a good move for Denver. Now, Orlando walks away. They come away with a starting five of Bynum, Ryan Anderson, Danilo Gallinari, Jason Richardson, Jameer Nelson, Tito, Turkoglu coming off the bench, Big Baby Davis coming off the bench, Corey Brewer coming off the bench, with Duhon and Kosta Koufos rounding it out. Now, Orlando really comes out, I think, in good shape. They get a cornerstone in Bynum, again, who's a little flighty, but you gotta take what you can get. And what I did with this was, they don't have a GM right now, but I thought, when have they been at their best with this roster? Because they're going to still have to keep the core of their roster. They're just moving the centerpiece. And when they made the finals, they had that Turkoglu, Rashard Lewis lineup, which was a matchup nightmare for people because they had two guys who were 6'10" who could stretch the floor. Now, you have something similar when you got Anderson and Gallinari in the mix. You got two guys who are 6'10" and above who you have to guard out to the three-point line and beyond. You put those guys with Jason Richardson and Nelson around Bynum, and you have a similar makeup of a team. Plus, now you can bring in Turkoglu off the bench as a six man. He's not playing as many minutes. He's up there in age, but he can be a playmaker. So now you got another 6'10 guy coming off the bench who can do some damage as a playmaker, plus Big Baby Davis to bang, Corey Brewer to play some defense on the wing, and you got a backup center in Kosta Koufos. Boom. That's how you get Dwight Howard to L.A.
You broke that down. I don't like you're the resident capologist. I felt like I needed to get my notes out. I'm like, yes, professor.
Yeah, you had to take notes on that one, man. I did a lot of talking.
Oh, you did your thing. I can't even follow. All I could do is, I was like, it sounds good to me. Like, you might get a phone call. We got a young GM in the making.
And the numbers work. In the trade machine, the numbers work. So that was really all I was concerned with, that the numbers work. I had to find some other way to make the numbers work, because I tried a couple different configurations and I couldn't really get anything to work with a couple other teams. But so that's what I came up with. Now, the number four team we got, the number four scenario is we got the Orlando Magic. We have Dwight staying in Orlando. D-Will's got to sign that task of, okay, so what can Orlando do to keep this brother there? What you got, D-Will?
Man, if you heard the press conference, you just made my job tough. I got this assignment after listening to today. I mean, Orlando Magic are the only team to fire. Only in Orlando you can fire the sixth best winningest coach in NBA with NBA history, and make it sound like he tore it down. And so at this point I was like, oh, and then you got rid of the GM. So this is a scenario. This is pretty simple the way I'm looking at this. Is one of the things you said, game changer, is that superstars are looking for management. And I also think, in addition to that, I would say they're also looking for a management team, but they're also looking for a partner and a coach that they can connect with. Think about Phil and Kobe. You think about the big three in Boston and how they mess with Doc. You look at what's happening in Miami with somebody getting cussed out when it don't work right. But that relationship between the head coach and the superstar, when it's right, is critical. And so I think their first big acquisition is the coach. And I think, you know, just looking at some of the people, I think Brian Shaw, because you need somebody who can sell him a vision that he can believe. So you need a GM that he can connect with, but you most likely you need a coach who can come with a little different, who can come with a different message track. And I think, if they get Brian Shaw, when you look at their roster, you look at how they even played without him, they got some pieces that, you know, are they going to be contention for the Eastern Conference? They could be with Dwight in the right mindset. But I think Brian Shaw is going to bring – one thing about the Van Gundys, they kill it offense because they coach every possession down the floor. That's my only criticism, is that in their style – will get you to finals, but they might not get you past the finals, because at a certain point, you need to create something where folks can just make things happen. But I think Brian Shaw, because of his experience running the triangle and developing some continuity, I think getting someone like that to set a vision on him is important. So then I think they could have a season of that is without a whole bunch of craziness. And I think that's very important. But then I think that positions them to clear a lot of cap room. So they can't do the amnesty because they already used that on Gilbert Arenas. But I think they're in a position after next season to be able to create some cap room where they can attract some free agents. I think for them, that's the best scenario they have, because they don't have as many – if you look at their roster, they don't have as many people that they can move to – get the return that would be necessary to keep him. But I think if you get the right coach and you sell the idea of what you're going to do in free agency and he can really mesh, I think that's the best opportunity.
I like it. Very sound, very, very logical, approach. I don't think they're going to keep him there. I don't think they can keep him there. I think they have to trade him this summer. I think you have to. If you go into the season with him, you're gonna wind up getting back 70 cents on the dollar, and you can't have that at this point. And I think they made a bad move by getting rid of a good GM and a good coach, in Otis Smith and Stan Van Gundy, two guys who've done nothing but win and be successful in Orlando.
Yeah.
So now the last one, we threw a wild card in there for number five. THD's got the wild card. We told PhD he can go in whatever direction he wanted to go. He can go mad scientist with it. So let's see what you got for us. PhD.
Indiana. Again, Dwight Howard has put the Magic in a tough situation.
Dwight around your mouth.
Howard. Oh man. He's put the Magic in a tough situation where they're not going to get market value. I think we've all echoed this. And Roy Hibbert, it's just not real comfortable. You know, just like I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, Hibbert blocks 9 shots, put up the same numbers as Bynum, but we're talking about Bynum the next day just because it feels better. So Hibbert's performance so far in the playoffs, he's had a couple of monster games, specifically that 19-18 game he had against the Heat a couple of games ago. I think it increases his profile, and I can see this deal happening because, you know, I don't know if it's the right deal, but I could see Indiana needs a marquee player. And this deal works if Dwight Howard continues to develop offensively. Because as odd as this is to say, I think Roy Hibbert may have more polish to his offensive game than Dwight Howard has. But Dwight Howard, I think, brings a little bit more defensively. So that's my wild card.
That is a feasible wild card. I like that. I like what you did there, sir. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Indiana does have a lot of depth. They do have a lot of pieces that they can move along with for Roy Hibbert. I think you're right. You know, if Roy Hibbert's playing in New York or L.A. or, you know, Dallas even, and he's having the playoff that he's had to this point, we're viewing him a little bit differently. And we're talking about what he does a little bit differently overall, and that raises his profile a bit. I like that, man. I think Indiana's got some, you know, when you talk about some guys like Tyler Hansborough, Darren Collison, yep. George Hill, you know, some other pieces that they have that they could throw in that are still young, still developing, and could be very productive players given more minutes somewhere else. Hey, you might be on to something, my brother.
Yeah, because I think Indiana has three qualities.
Tupac even.
You know, Indiana has two quality point guards, starting quality point guards in George Hill and Collison. And we saw the way that Hill played the last couple of weeks of the season when Collison was hampered with injury and was in and out of the lineup. And you've even seen down the stretch in the playoffs where the coach feels more comfortable with Hill and gives him those stretch fourth quarter minutes. You know, to me, though, if I'm Dwight Howard, how is this any different than the Magic? You know, when the Magic were at their height in terms of the talent that was around him. I don't see it much different. I just see a change of scenery, and you're going to have more substance than flash. To me, I think the direction we're going with the NBA with all these big threes, that's fine. I mean, they work out okay, but I think it's a situational thing. You know, I think this is why we see it working in Miami and not in New York. And, you know, if you can have a big three, one or two of those have to be phenomenal players. I mean, they have to be top one, two, three players in the league, which LeBron is, and Dwayne Wade is right there knocking on the door. You know, I don't think this is why it doesn't happen or work in New York. So if I'm Dwight Howard, I'm looking for a more solid situation, and I think this Indiana could be it.
Yeah, man, I think you're right on. So we gave you a little bit of something to chew on. If you have any reaction to that, definitely hit us up on Facebook. Check us out, Real Sports Guys on Facebook, or check us out on Twitter. Also, hit us up on our website, www.realsportsguys.com. You are listening to The Real Sports Guys.
RSG Renegade Radio. We're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Now, we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. Man, it feels good to see people up on it. Dog of the Week is back. This is a segment of the show where we give a shout-out, honor, raise our glass to guys who performed as dogs. And here we have what we call, on RSG, Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio, we have what we call the dog meter. And the dog meter is all about having that mental toughness, that a certain kind of mentality. It's hard to really put it to words. Regardless of that, you know, one thing we always need around here.
We need more dogs.
So, D. Wills, your dog of the week, sir.
And you know, early on I coined this, and it was in criticism of the person who was my dog of the week. You know, LeBron James has created, he's been hit a lot for the decision, for a lot of things he's been doing, the way in which he went to Miami. But he's my dog of the week. And even though, I have to do it even on his performance tonight, you know, he had a pivotal game four performance that was amazing. But tonight they won by, over 20? And he had 30 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists. Then they had a triple-double. Coming off of 40, what his performance was on in game four. 40-18-9. So you put those two performances together at a moment where he had to step up and do something because their backs were against the wall. He's my dog of the week.
Love it, man.
Well, man, I agree. Brothers, LeBron played out of his mind, and he has to. He's got to go Cavalier LeBron. For the rest of this playoff, he's got to be locked in like that for the rest of this playoff. He can't take a night off. He can't risk going into a funk of any kind because they don't have the same margin of error without Bosh in the fold. I like that pick. My man, PhD.
We need more dogs.
Well, my dog of the week is also LeBron James, but I will talk about somebody else. My runner-up dog of the week would be Roy Hibbert. Yep, Roy Hibbert. Again, doesn't feel very comfortable, but if you look at the way this guy played and the two wins that the Pacers had over the Heat, offensively he brought it, but defensively, I mean, he just puts you back in the moment of a Olajuwon back when he was at Houston. I'm talking about the Houston Cougars in college. Like Ewing at Georgetown, he just clogged up the middle and just changed the course of the game. So Roy Hibbert is my dog of the week.
Okay. And I want to say that's a good dog of the week. I want to say that I sent out on Twitter that every kid that's 6'10 and over who is a high school player, college player, should watch Roy Hibbert. Learn to shoot a hook from either side. Look at how he's efficient offensively. You can stay in the league a long time. This is a guy who's going to play for 18 years just on his little offensive moves. So I love that. I'm glad you shed some light on it.
Yeah, I want to echo that point. I want to shout out to all of the big men out there. You know, I'm a guard. I'm 6'3". Ain't a whole lot else I could do on the court. And I'm gonna speak for all the young guards out there. Stick to shooting hook shots and drop steps and your up and unders, and you go work on that. Cause we gonna shoot the outside shots. We don't need the big guys coming out to do the only job we can do. All right, you 6'10" and over, Kevin Durant, Dirk, go get some post moves, man. Quit trying to do our job, okay? At 6'3", ain't much else I can do on the basketball court. All right, dribble, pass, and shoot, man. I ain't taking nobody on the block. You trying to push me out of a job? That's what I always thought about big guys who wanted to play on the perimeter. You better get your big butt down and earn some money. Okay, this is all I can do. This is all I got right now. You trying to move in on my territory because you 7-8 inches taller than me. Get gone somewhere. My dog of the week. For my dog of the week, I am going to give a shout out to my man Shaka Smart and the VCU athletic department. Props to them making a move to the A-10. I'm looking forward to see how well they do. Also, a shout out to Brad Evans and the Butler athletic department for moving into the A-10 as well. I think for both of those programs, that was a huge move, something that I think is going to allow them to maintain the profile and continue to grow their profile as programs. And it also shows us a different side of the conference expansion coin than we've seen. We've seen the football, how it's looked in football. In basketball, it's definitely a boom for those mid-major basketball programs. There's a lot of flagship basketball programs in mid-majors. When you talk about a Gonzaga, Butler's, the VCU's. When you talk about schools like that that are mid-majors, even a Memphis that's moving into the Big East in a couple years. When you talk about schools like that that are basketball schools, first, and so, you know, VCU, I don't even know if they have a football, they don't have a D1 football program. Butler doesn't have a D1 football program. So their basketball team is their main moneymaker. Having them be able to leverage themselves into a bigger conference to continue to raise their profile, I think that's, to me, that's a good piece of expansion, because it's allowing some programs it's allowing some upward mobility in college athletics. And I like that. Where in college athletics, expansion seems to be the rich getting richer, where you have more of a coalescing of high power programs into these gated communities, so to speak, of athletics. I kind of like to see the small guys getting to jump in and getting to, you know, see if they can run with the big dogs a little bit. Even though the A-10 isn't amazing, it's still very good basketball, and they usually get multiple bids. So hats off to them. So, yeah, I like that. I like that. Now, next up, we're going to go into the shutdown. Now, the shutdown is where we take something that's been bugging us, been kind of digging in our craw for the last week or so, and we kind of really dig into it, and we kind of lay it down, and we shut it down, at least for the next week till we come on air again. And if we need to, we'll shut it down again a week after that. Now, I'm going to kick off the shutdown this week because I have something that has been driving me nuts over the last couple of days. And it centers around people talking about Andrew Bynum and his maturity. Now, you know, the question has been raised a couple of times, and I think, you know, I heard it on the radio today. Somebody came on, I think Mike and Mike, I don't know who it was, it really, but I've heard it before, that he wouldn't be like he is if he had gone to college. Now, again, when you come on this show, you know we are advocates for the student athlete. We're advocates for the experience that comes with playing sports in college. I'm all for that. But to say that Andrew Bynum wouldn't be a jerk, a jabroni, whatever adjective you want to use to describe his lack of maturity, if he had gone to college, is just dumb. Okay? College doesn't make you any less of a jerk. If you're a jerk, you're going to be a jerk with a degree or without a degree. Is it going to make him any more mature? Nope. At this point in his life, he is what he is, and whether he went to college or not, if he hasn't matured, he wasn't going to really mature that much more in college. Not the way the college system is set up. This dude was going to live in a bubble on his campus. He's going to live in a bubble that was going to be catered to his needs and his wants. He's going to probably be there for a year. He'd be out, and he'd be the same guy, maybe worse. So don't give me the whole...
Oh, shit, what happened?
I think we lost the game changer. You still out there, D Wills?
Yeah, I'm still out here. I'll go to my shutdown.
So my shutdown of the week, man, is Kobe Bryant. Kobe, why are you putting your teammates out there to pasture? You can't do this in 2012. I mean, what's going on with you, Kobe? Kobe, man, come on, man. What's going on with you? All right. Who's your shutdown, D. Wills?
I had a couple. I was gonna go with the Kobe one. But I'm going to shut down the Indiana Pacers. Lance Stevenson. Granger, quit trying to be paper champions. Y'all came into the playoffs with this really authentic brand about y'all played hard on every possession. What's all the extra stuff? At what point did you feel like you had to go WWE? You got folks on the sidelines talking about you. If you own the bench, be on the bench. Don't try and be on the bench and then talk for some stuff that somebody else is going to have to deal with. Now you done got beat down by like 20. Because you got folks who just woke up the sleeping giant. If your job is to sit on the bench and to get water and Gatorade and cheer for your team, don't agitate the star on the other team when you know you're not going to step on the court. Come on, folks. Where's the coach? Where's the other veterans to tell somebody like that just to be quiet? Now you're paying the price. That's your fault.
That's a shutdown, my man. Looking at what we got coming up. So tomorrow on Inside the Park, they have a very interesting show plan. It looks like they're going to get into Dimitri Young. Remember him, Devon, the meat hook?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to talk about Dimitri Young. He sold his baseball card collection for $2.5 million. They're also going to talk a little bit about umpire, the whole baseball situation and balls and strikes and with all the technology, should we still have people, humans, calling balls and strikes? Should we do something to take out the air element there? So that's what we're going to be doing on Inside the Park tomorrow with RJ, Ray, and RJ, Hank, and Mike. So back to you, Game Changer.
Yeah, back in the building, man. Check us out. Thank you for joining us this week. Real Sports Guys. RSG, Renegade Radio, www.realsportsguys.com. We're going to hold you down like we always do, every week. So, make sure you join in. Check us out, 8:30 to 10:30, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Again, that's Real Sports Guys, www.realsportsguys.com. RSG, Renegade Radio, and we out. Thank you. Doodle Jump.